Hey guys, Nacho here with the Veterinary WTF Moments podcast. I want to thank you guys for joining me. This interview you're about to listen to is actually the very first one I'm doing with one of the page fans, and I have some more lined up to do and gonna bring those out later on. But this is Jenny from New Zealand. She's actually a fifth year veterinary student over in New Zealand, and I believe she said it was the only college there, the only university that offers veterinary school. But we had a great conversation, and I'm really happy I got to talk to her. And she's got her own podcast, actually. And it was cool to learn that I'm not the only one doing this. So if you guys get a chance, head on over and take a listen. You guys will hear about it in the interview. But for now, that's about it. I'm gonna wrap up this intro and let you guys listen to this awesome conversation. Take care.
Talk about kind of what you do, your experience in the field. Honestly, it's free game, and there's no filter here, no censoring. So whatever you want to talk about.
That makes me really happy. I probably won't be too anonymous because it would actually be pretty easy to find me if someone actually wanted to find me. I'm still a vet student here in New Zealand. So hi, I'm Jenny. Nice to meet you.
I am your friendly neighborhood Nacho.
Excellent. But yeah, I'm a fifth year vet student here in New Zealand at Massey University. We only have one university here that does veterinary science. And I'm a mature student, so I'm an old fogey and I'm grumpy and I'm damn kids, get off my lawn. This is my second career. Well, I wouldn't call my first one a career. I was a legal secretary for donkey's ears, and that was great. I got to herd cats, aka lawyers, and boss them around, and that was an awful lot of fun. But I decided that if I was going to work sort of 12 to 14 hour days, I didn't want to do it making assholes rich. So
that's one hell of a career change. I mean, these are almost polar opposites,
pretty much, except that I always should have been a vet. But when I was younger, okay, I was too much of a dick. So it really would not have worked. I was, you know those really arrogant kids?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so fucking smart, rah-rah-rah-rah, I can just coast through everything. I was one of them.
So are you saying you've gotten sweeter with age?
I have gotten sweeter with age, strangely enough.
Or you temper it better. I guess you
could. That's actually probably a good point. I'm better able to restrain myself from being an arrogant cunt.
No, I fully understand that.
Yeah, but it still slips out occasionally. But I finally got back into it back here in New Zealand. I was living in Australia at the time, and I moved back home with my two cats, my dog, and my two horses. Pro tip, okay, Don't move countries with animals. It's fiendishly expensive. Now I'm a vet student.
Yes. No, I am fully aware. So I have gone kind of the opposite route you have. Nobody's had a chance to really interview me, so I guess this is a little intro to who I am. But I started in the veterinary field. I spent five years in the veterinary field, and then I switched to active duty U.S. Army.
So wow.
Yes, I've been doing that 5 years. So I went from working in a GP clinic to active duty infantry, and that's been my life for 5 years.
And, holy shit!
So, it's been a hell of a switch. And the one thing that is stopping me from taking an overseas assignment is the fact that I have two dogs and a cat. That would be expensive as shit to transfer or to move them to a new country.
Yes, it would be. I'm assuming you're somewhere in the States?
Yes, I am actually in Georgia, Southwest Georgia, Fort Benning.
Yeah, you would have, depending on where you move to, because of course there are some rabies-free countries, and rabies and all of that kind of thing is really expensive. Any animal coming into New Zealand or Australia, because we're rabies-free, is, I think it's a one-month mandatory quarantine, and the quarantine facilities are fucking expensive. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's the same way to take your pets to Hawaii. That's a big duty station here. And yep. To go to Hawaii, there's the rabies quarantine you have to go through.
Yep. It's that's really, really stressful for animals because they're in a place that's completely unfamiliar to them for a full month, and everything gets scrubbed out every single day. It's just concrete. It's yep. awful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's one of those things, you know, I have my husky, I've talked about her before. She's a senior, she's 11. So, I mean, I plan on having her for many more years, but yep. it's going to be one of those things. It's probably going to be, 10 years or so before we move anywhere, or take any sort of overseas assignment. My wife and I, when I say we take an yep. overseas assignment, just because of, the pets, we are animal lovers. I for the life of me, I will never understand how people can move and not take members of their family.
Neither can I. It's appalling.
It is. And you see it a lot in the military. You see it so yeah. much.
Yeah.
And even if you're moving within the states, moving two states over to a new duty station, I've seen people drop off their animals at the stray center here on Fort Benning because they yeah. didn't want to take their pets with them.
Fuckers.
Yes, it's heartbreaking, and I absolutely hate them.
Yep. I recently saw a advert for an 8-year-old poodle who they'd had since they were a puppy, and because they were moving house and their new house wouldn't take pets, they could not keep her.
See, that's absolute bullshit. Like I said, I've yep. had my husky for 11 years, and she has moved 6 times with my wife and I. And yep. every time we have moved to somewhere new, the first thing on our list for looking for a place to rent or an apartment or whatever is if they are pet friendly.
Yep. Oh, I don't even bother with that. Here in New Zealand, they say no pets. I apply anyway. I look fucking amazing on paper. Really, really good on paper. And I present really well. And I say, look, these are my animals. This is what they're like. All of my previous landlords will sing my praises from the rooftops because I don't put holes in walls and I don't cook meth. which is a real problem here in New Zealand. I'm not kidding. We love to cook meth, and boy, oh boy, the amount of meth-contaminated houses is astronomical.
That is crazy. I mean, I wouldn't have even dreamed of that.
We love our methamphetamine. So I live in a little city called Palmerston North. You'd probably call it a town. It's about 20,000 people. It's where Massey University is. We are the methamphetamine central point because we're fairly centrally located in the North Island of New Zealand. So everything goes through here. So we're the methamphetamine hub for the North Island.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And I only found that out because my mom was talking to a dude at the bus station and he was a member of one of the gangs. And she's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just chat to you. Sweet as. Yes. My mom is equally.
So that's like, is there, I guess, a gang issue? So you'll have to forgive me. I am completely ignorant of New Zealand or even Australian, goings on.
Yeah.
And so if I ask you a question, I mean, no offense, but I'm just trying to get educated here. So
all good. Ask. There is no such thing as a dumb question. So ask away.
Absolutely. Well, and as I've said on the page before, the only difference between ignorance and stupidity is ignorance is not knowing something. Stupidity is disregarding information after it's been provided. So,
yes, exactly. Go nuts.
Yes. So anyway, I didn't realize like gangs were really a thing. I mean, I guess over here in the States, we always see the romanticized and beautiful New Zealand and Australia. So we don't get the news like you guys do. And
the gritty underbelly of New Zealand.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, we do have a gang problem here in New Zealand. We have a serious drug problem. Weed is legal here in New Zealand, and the gangs predominantly control that. We also have a serious problem with poverty. There is a housing crisis. You cannot buy a house in our major city for under, $600,000, $700,000.
Oh, dear Lord.
And your average wage is 62,000 a year.
Oh my gosh. Now, what's is the I don't know what currency you guys use, but is about on par with the US dollar?
I think it's now like 1 point. It's lower than the US dollar. It's New Zealand dollars, I think, is 1 to 1.5 or 1.6. Sometimes we go as
Okay.
low as 1 to 2, but that's usually when the British pound is a 1 to 3 ratio. So we have a currency that's valued quite a bit under yours.
Okay. So, I mean, that's crazy. So a $600,000 house, that's if I'm doing my math not backwards, that'd be the equivalent of what, like a $900,000 house here?
Yes. Oh, no, other way
Oh.
around. Backwards. So,
Other way around. See, I did it backwards. That's never do math in public.
I have to tell you this story, just a complete sidebar.
Go
We have
ahead.
wonderful class at Massey called Spine. Spine is the best. Spine is practical application of what the fuck we're supposed to be doing when we're out in practice. Instead of just the theoretical knowledge, we're given cases and we're told to work through them as a group. And you really have to
Oh,
go
excellent.
right down to what cell does this, what cell does that, what drug does this, what drug does that, et cetera, et cetera. And you have support while you're doing it, which is great. But we had one case, and it was a great, this is a theoretical case, and it was a large breed dog who came in at 5 o'clock. It was seizuring. You had it, you managed to control the seizures, but you didn't have anything that you could see our eye at overnight. There was no after hours. You weren't going to be able to stay after hours because you were dead on your feet. Calculate the CRI of Blue Goo to maintain this dog. All right.
Okay.
So Blue Goo is Pinto Balm, I think.
Okay.
Yep, Blue Goo is Death Goo. And it took 30 minutes for 20 veterinary students to calculate the correct dose, because we were coming up with like 2.5 liters an hour type shit, because we just could not math. And I'm not in the A's. I am passing comfortably. I haven't had to sit supplementals, but I'm not in the A team. The A team were doing exactly the same. So
Oh, geez.
it took us over 30 minutes to calculate how much blue goo for a CRI. I think it was a lab or something. And we were just replacing its entire body volume every single hour with blue goo. So don't ask vets to do math. This is why we need vet nurses and vet techs. They are the reason why everything is alive.
I think there are a lot of texts that would agree with you there.
Yeah, well, it's the absolute truth. One of my best mates is a nurse, and she's the reason why everything ticks over. So, big shout out to nurses and vet and techs. You guys are the heroes of the veterinary world and the reason why everything is alive, things work, and vets haven't murdered themselves. Wait, that's suicide. Yes, that one.
Now, is vet school there? Is it the same as in the States here? It's an 8-year program, so you have 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of your grad school.
No, actually, I think we're one of the last universities to keep vet as an undergrad. So it's a 5-year undergrad.
Oh, really? So you're in your
Yes.
final year then.
I am in my final
Oh,
year.
okay.
Because of health reasons, I'm taking it over 2 years, but I'm in my final year, part one.
Getting it done is getting it done.
Exactly right. And later on down the track, I would like to talk about the health issues because I want to talk about chronic illness in the veterinary industry and the fact that we're here and we're staying and shit's got to change.
Hey, this is your interview. Whenever
This
you
is
talk
true.
about it, I'm here to listen, and I'm here to share it with the 30,000 plus page fans we have.
Sweet. Okay, well, if anyone has chronic illness in the veterinary industry, hi, I have chronic illness. I have fibromyalgia. I've had that for 20 years and I was diagnosed 2 years ago. And I also recently have acquired atypical facial pain, which is atypical trigeminal neuralgia. That came up last year during the mid-year exams. It's not been fun managing those through vet school or burnout.
Now are these things that are manageable for you, or is it kind of you got to live with it?
It's more you gotta live with it and work on your good days, don't overdo it, and turn into an amorphous blob on your shitty days. That's basically been my policy. And I've just had a couple of I've actually just called out of a week of clinical work. I'm really lucky. The vet school here is being so accommodating for me. I've been very open with them about this. So fibromyalgia is chronic pain and chronic fatigue. It's a problem with your nerves and your brain, and normal sensory input gets translated or sent as pain. So what is just a drop of rain running down an arm for one person is a drop of fire running down my arm type thing. And trigeminal neuralgia, atypical trigeminal neuralgia, is constant burning and eating pain along the trigeminal nerve, all three branches. I have at the moment unilateral, it sometimes goes bilateral. So it's
Now, are there things that aggravate it, or is it just kind of your body's going to say, "Hey, fuck you, I'm going bilateral today."
Usually it's stress, lack of sleep, tension in my shoulders is a really big one as well.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think what other things. The other problem with fibromyalgia is short-term memory is almost non-existent. So I actually don't remember how painful I was like 3 days ago, which is an advantage because you don't remember how painful shit is, but it's also a disadvantage because I can't always remember my triggers.
Gotcha. Well, that's no fun.
No. But you just do the best that you can. But the vet school's been really, really kind about things, and they've said, look, if I'm not able to do a week, I simply tell them straight up and they will reschedule. So that's what I did this week. We had a very, very, very strenuous last couple of weeks, and I just fell face first and I couldn't really do things. And then I slammed my toe in the door. And my In the sliding door, it wasn't even anything cool. It was the sliding fucking door, and I went wham with my little toe. And when you have an injury, fibromyalgia tries to outcompete it.
Oh my gosh.
So my little toe was incredibly sore and incredibly swollen. And yesterday, everything from my waist down was on fire.
Well, as a former medical professional, I'm going to have to recommend that you don't do that anymore.
I would have to agree with you on that point. I'm really going to have to watch out for these doors. They just suddenly attack me.
They do.
It's a lifelong problem.
No, so for real, on a serious note, I do. We have on the page, we have received messages from people that do work in this field with chronic physical pains. And a big thing in the veterinary community is the mental anguish and the mental trials that you have to deal with. But we do have page fans that have messaged us for advice, and even just to get stuff off their chest, saying, "Hey, yes, I do deal with these kind of physical limitations, and but I don't want it ruining my career." So
You know, I really am happy to hear that you're able to share this with us. And then for anybody that you know, didn't catch it, I am talking to Jenny, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Can I plug my podcast?
I'm terrible with names.
Can I plug my podcast as well?
Absolutely. And I was going to ask you if at some point you'd like me to, you want to reverse roles here.
Yes, at some stage I would, but I'm also, I also do the podcast We're In It Up to the Shoulder, Darling, which is where I, a vet student, talk to my best mate, who is really not a vet student, and the entire comedic thing. I tell her about a particular disease in each episode, and we paused it for a little while because she had brain surgery. She has typical trigeminal neuralgia, which is just shooting pains. Not just shooting pains. It is shooting pains of sheer agony that are triggered by all sorts of things. She had an artery touching her trigeminal nerve just outside of her brain. So they stuck a sponge between it and they sutured it up and she doesn't have pain anymore.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's crazy. I mean, I'm so glad to hear that, you know, there's something out. It's simple, but it's also brain surgery, but you know what I mean? Like I don't, it's not simple, but it is, you know, it's an easy fix. They didn't have to do anything absolutely out there, crazy experimental. You know?
And they didn't actually need to go into the brain itself. They just broke the dura mater in the skull because it's outside of the brain. Going into the skull, but it's not technically brain surgery. We just call it brain surgery because it's cooler and quick to explain.
No, but that's awesome that you know they found a fix that's helping.
Oh, fuck yeah. And it's so if you've got typical trigeminal neuralgia, get an MRI, find out where that fucking artery is, or if you've got multiple sclerosis or a tumor, and get rid of that shit.
Absolutely.
It's fixable. Fucking fix it. I've had an MRI. There is nothing wrong with me. Good news is I don't have multiple sclerosis, I don't have a tumor, and I don't have an artery touching my trigeminal nerve. They cannot fix my face. There is nothing they can do to fix my fucking face. At the time I got this information, I was a 9 out of 10, completely incapacitated with the pain. And I just sobbed for 2 days straight because they can't fix it. I'm fucked. They can't fix it. I had my acupuncturist stick needles in my face, and that's really helped.
That's good. I know there's been, you know, there is some debate about, you know, acupuncture. Is it fooey? Is it good medicine? And yeah. It's one of those things where you don't know until you do it.
Exactly. And it doesn't work for everything. It doesn't work for everyone.
No.
But I was very fortunate. I have a very, very good acupuncturist who I've been seeing for quite some time. He actually said, look, I think you've got fibromyalgia. Talk to your GP. But he is very skilled and it's really worked for me. I try to get to him once a week. I can go about 3 weeks before my trigeminal neuralgia starts to get really bad. I get stabbed in the face. My nerve feels like I've got worms going under my skin, and it feels better the next day.
Well, I mean, that's good.
It's awesome.
I mean, yes, that is great that you found something that is helping and bringing you comfort.
Yeah.
I am genuinely happy to hear that.
Thank you very much. I can assure you I am much happier.
I mean I can tell just from talking to you, you are in such high spirits, and this conversation, I just checked. We are 20 minutes into this and I didn't even realize it because I'm thoroughly enjoying this conversation. You are wonderful to talk to. And
thank you.
I'm loving it.
Excellent. Well, I have one simple policy in life. You can either laugh or you can cry. crying gets you fucking nowhere. You have to at some stage. You have to do it. You have to let yourself have a complete fucking meltdown, but you cannot wallow. If you wallow, your chronic illness wins and you lose.
Yes, I would agree with you there. I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from, and I would agree with you.
But sometimes you need medication to help. Yeah. I will also say my first venture into actually getting help was for my anxiety and depression. I'm a severely anxious human being. And I first started out on Prozac, and then I found out that I had probably fibromyalgia. So now I'm on pregabalin, and that's also a happy drug. So I've got a lot of happy drugs in my system, which really fucking helps. If you are anxious or depressed or you have a chronic illness, get some fucking happy drugs. It helps.
Yes.
Yeah, it really helps. And therapy. Because...
Yeah, I know one of our admins, I won't say which, but actually does therapy regularly, and it has helped them a lot.
Yep. I've got free counseling through the university for I think it's about 6 sessions when it's like an emergency, and so I've been going to counseling, which is therapy, and that's really helped me put a lot of things in perspective and understand a lot of things. And I'll be going back to her again this year when we start euthanizing animals. Oh, we've already started euthanizing animals, and that kind of sucked. But just so that I can get my head around the grief and managing that.
It definitely takes a toll. No matter how tough you are, how mentally resilient you are, it does take a toll.
Yep. Yep. And therapy is amazing. I will credit the podcast My Favorite Murder for talking about, so Georgia and Karen for talking about mental health and therapy and medication and making it more normal, and also for my bestie Amy, who's got the typical trigeminal neuralgia. She's also got anti-anxiolytics, and just talking to people about it has made it more normal and more acceptable, and has removed a lot of the stigma for me. And so I was able to seek therapy, and I was able to seek medication, and I was able to seek help. Were it not for them, I would not have been able to, because the stigma would have been, it would have just stuck in my brain that you're broken and there is something wrong with you. And that makes it really hard to try to get help.
It does. And if you let those negative thoughts take over, they will consume you.
Yep.
And if you let them win, they will do everything to win.
Yep.
And so you have to actively fight those negative thoughts, that the depression, the anxiety, anything that's telling you no, you have to actively fight that, or it will win.
Absolutely. And sometimes the best way to fight that is by putting on a podcast and not leaving yourself alone in your own brain. I lived with podcasts for probably coming on 2 years now, and that's really helped. When I find myself rattling around in my brain and the negative thoughts are coming up, stick on a fucking podcast. It doesn't matter if you're paying a huge amount of attention to it, just stick it on for the background noise, because that dulls your brain. And it helps a little bit to keep yourself distracted. And then, of course, actually getting meds and therapy helps even more. So it's a combined attack. Yeah.
Now, let me, this is going to be a terrible segue.
That's
but
fine.
I did want to ask you before we got into all this, and I kind of just remembered. So now that you're creeping up on the listen, I get distracted very easily.
Oh, shiny things. Oh, squirrel.
What's that?
Squirrel.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I see something shiny, and you've lost me.
Yeah.
And. But no, it's good. I was happy to run with the conversation where it was going because it's stuff that needs to be said. And again, a little bit of a humble brag, but this page now has over 30,000 fans. And one thing that I have said time and time again on there is, especially with the vet med community, you are never the only person going through something. So getting that out there and letting people know, even if it's just one other person, you are, no matter what you're going through, you are not the only one going through it. Somebody else out there is going to be able to relate with you. That's going to help, that may help them, and it may help you if you guys are able to connect somehow. That's one thing I love about our community. And what my goal with the page, I have a lot of goals with the page, but one of the big ones is the community. You know, bringing people together, letting people say what's on their mind and know that they are not alone in the stuff that they go through every day.
And that's actually a really important point. Just knowing you're not alone is surprisingly comforting.
Yes.
I've connected with another vet tech in training who's got lupus and is going through vet tech with lupus, and just knowing that she's not alone has made her feel a lot happier about things and a lot more comfortable about things, because vet and vet tech are fucking brutal degrees.
Yes.
Truly, truly, they stick you through the ringer and they chuck you out burnt out. It's pretty burnt out, hey, perks. But doing it under normal circumstances is excruciating enough. Doing it with a chronic illness is very, very hard and requires so much determination. And so just knowing that you're not the only one struggling and fighting through this is really, really comforting.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So there I go getting distracted again, but I did want to ask you, now that you're reaching the end of your vet schooling, do you know kind of what you want to go into? Are you looking to do large animal or, you know, you're a small animal, DP, emergency medicine, research? What are you looking for?
I always thought I wanted to do cats and just cats, because I am a crazy cat lady.
I hear you.
And then I went on placement to a rural practice, and I have not done any rural practice experience at all up until this point. I've hardly even touched a cat.
When you say you went on placement, does that mean like an internship, externship?
I'm not entirely sure how to translate it into the American side of vet, but during fourth year,
it's kind of like on the job work and training.
Yes. So during fourth year, we have to do, I think it's six weeks of practical experience in veterinary clinics throughout New Zealand, and you have to do 3 in smallies and 3 in largies.
So here in the States, that'd be like an externship. What our techs go through.
Yeah. So I was doing my first large animal externship, and sure, we'd done some work with the Massey cows, and they were really lovely and they were sweet and all that kind of thing. And, you know, rectal palpation, that kind of thing. So at least when we stick our hands up a cow's asshole, we have half an idea of what we're feeling instead of just, oh, squishy thing. Well, that's the theory anyway. In practice, it doesn't really work out like that, because you still stick your arm up the asshole of a cow and go, oh, it's just a squishy thing. I don't know what I'm feeling. But anyway, I went on my first large animal practical, and I went with a really, really, really lovely vet, and we were doing, what was it? We were clearing the dirty cows. So of course, once they've had their calf, a few weeks later, they may not have fully cleared the uterus. There may be retained fetal membranes. They may have metritis or endometritis. So we were checking for that. And where appropriate, we were treating them with, intrauterine antibiotics. So that involved the joyous part of scooping out the goop in the vestibule and giving it a whiff. Oh, it's disgusting. It fucking reeks. It's and sometimes you even have to pull out retained fetal membranes. It's like, ugh. And these have been sitting there for 2 weeks, so they're just, oh, disgusting. Yeah.
She's been marinating.
Yes, I'm talking really foul-smelling shit. and so there were quite a few of them, and it was so I live in a very mountainous area. We have the ranges, and it's really quite beautiful. On a clear day, you can see our two main volcanoes, Mount Ruapehu, which is our ski field. We ski on an active volcano because fuck you, why not? And it was a beautiful day. There was not a cloud in the sky. There were the ranges. I could see the ranges over the backs of the cows, and I stuck my hand up a cow's asshole, and for the first time, I found the cervix, I found the uterus, and I could find the ovaries. And it was at that moment that I realized that I had to do this for the rest of my life.
I guess... answer to the question is large animal.
Yes.
That is awesome.
Thanks to a cow's asshole on a beautiful day. that's my favorite part of the story. People look at me really strangely because I associate with a lot of non-veterinary people, so sticking your hand up a cow's asshole is not normal.
No.
But it's really fun to get those reactions. I'm going into large animals, and that brings its own unique challenges. So I need a cane to get around. I have most of my fibromyalgia pain is affiliated with my hips and my hip muscles. And I find that if I have a cane, I can swing my hips a lot better and I don't have to tense those muscles up a lot. So I'm not as painful at the end of the day. But I also have balance problems, and I've discovered that my left arm can no longer go up the asshole of a cow because my left elbow muscles will not allow it. It's excruciatingly painful, and I can't get the anal sphincter past sort of mid lower arm.
Oh, really?
On my left arm. So my right arm needs a bit of training, which I'll be doing.
Now, are you a lefty?
I'm a righty, but I learned on my left hand. I learned on my left hand to write with your right hand.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So need to do a bit of a switcheroo with that. And I need to get really good at ultrasounding pregnancies because I'm not going to be able to manually palpate them as well as a normal vet would. And you just have to work around things. When you've got a chronic illness, you can't do things the normal way. If you try to do things the normal way, you're going to fail because you're not normal. So you have to figure out inventive ways of getting around your various disabilities. So for me, I'm going to be training up a dog to assist me with my mobility. And this is going to be a dog that's an ex-farm dog, so used to stock, used to farm environment, that kind of thing. And it's not going to be unfamiliar on a farm, so the cows won't get too hit up about it. I also will need to work with probably a decently muscled tech, because I do not have the physical strength to do a lot of the heavy lifting, because fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, it sucks.
I mean, and that's not a bad thing. That's, you know, if you're faced with any sort of adversity like that, you gotta improvise, you gotta adjust fire, and you gotta make a plan.
Exactly.
And you become good at what's gonna be good for you. It sounds a little redundant, but you become good at what's gonna be good for you.
Exactly. And so over the last couple of years, I've really had to revise what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it. I wanted to go pure production, dairy, sheep, and beef. They're the predominant ones here. Maybe a little bit of deer and goats. I love goats, but now I'm probably going to end up more in preventative medicine and farm planning. So working on the larger side of things, so I don't have to spend all of my days out hauling calves out of Frisians and doing that kind of thing. So much as I want to be out on the field all the time, I can't do that. So you find a different thing.
Now, do you have anybody, let's say anybody that you know with experience like this that can kind of guide you through trying to do what you're trying to do with your chronic pain and everything like that? Or are you kind of like a trailblazer here where you're going to be writing the book for future veterinary students that are running into the same issues that you have?
I am completely winging it.
Okay.
I have a lot of non-veterinary support. I'm very fortunate to have the support of my entire family, financially and emotionally. My flatmate, my partner, and the veterinary school themselves. So if I say I want to do this thing and I figure out a plan, they say, okay. And that's pretty much been it, I come up against a problem, I work my way around it, I organize a plan, and then I tell people this plan, and they help me get through it.
Well, see, that's great. You're basically writing the book on working in this field with chronic pain and chronic health issues. And I feel like I may be being a little ambitious here, but yep, that's going to be a good thing, because it may open the doors for others that, you know, want to explore this field, but maybe in their head, you know, they're holding themselves back, and you're showing that it is possible and it's doable. It's attainable.
Yes. And that's actually a real passion of mine. I do at some stage want to set up an organization that supports people in the veterinary industry with chronic illnesses. It'll probably be a Facebook page that'll just be a place for people to, you know, get emotional support from one another. But we need to start doing this, because chronic illnesses aren't going away. And there are a lot of people who would make amazing veterinarians, vet nurses, vet techs, who think they can't because it is such a physical and demanding job. And that's not acceptable. I will not accept that I cannot do something because of that. I will not allow that to stop me.
I love that mindset.
Yeah.
No. I love that mindset.
You cannot allow things to get between you and what you have to do with your life. And veterinary science is what I have to do with my life. It's about as important to me as breathing. It's, you know, you have your calling and this is mine. And so,
that's very true with pretty much anybody that goes into the veterinary field.
Yeah.
We all know that we don't get into this for the money. It's not about the money.
No.
I mean, you know, I say that while I'm polishing my Lamborghini from my 5 years working.
you know, has managed to really rack up some stacks of cash there.
Absolutely.
But in all seriousness, that's the thing is, you know, you have such a passion for veterinary medicine, and that's anybody that spends any amount of time, like they decide that this is what they want to do for their life, they have a true passion for it. They're not just looking to make a quick buck or, you know, get by easy and you know, do 20, 30 years just cruising on through just to retire.
Yeah.
You know, you actually have to love what you're doing.
Yep. Because otherwise, there's really no point. And like you say, there's no money in it. If you want money, fuck off and become a lawyer. Seriously.
Yeah.
They get paid shit stacks. Like, yeah. Well, legal secretary here. I've worked as legal secretary for 8 odd years or so, I think, around about that. And even the summer, even the students who are working for a summer get paid.
Oh,
like, these are the fucking students who are getting work experience and they get paid. We do not. We have an entire year where we are in practice being a veterinarian with oversight and we don't get paid shit.
No.
And we have to work 12 to 15 hour days.
Not at all.
Like,
see, that's, and that again takes me back to my point. You have to love this, otherwise you won't stay. So that, I mean, that's kind of what happened with me. Don't get me wrong, I love veterinary medicine. That's why 5 years at you know, being out of practice, I'm sitting here running this page.
Yeah.
And with I say running it, but honestly it's the other admins that do a lot of the work.
Yeah.
Because I've been out of the field for 5 years. I'm not caught up and savvy on what, you know, the newer medicines,
yeah,
stuff like that. And they do a good job keeping me up to date.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I still have a passion for it, but it's kind of one of those things. Like I got burned out after 5 years. I reached my limit, and I found that the military was a better fit for me. You know, You guys know, you've seen me on the page. I do not have much of a filter, and I speak my mind. I don't give a fuck. If you want to be stupid, I'm going to call you out. And I'm able to do that in person in the military. So I kind of like that. It's more of my speed, but I still have a deep appreciation and love for the medical field in general, but especially the veterinary field.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I see so many veterinarians and vet techs and vet nurses who work for 5 years and then they're like, nah, fuck it, I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
Well, and for me too, it was a financial thing as well.
Yeah.
Like I was married, wife and I, we had a small apartment at the time, and as it goes back to our discussion a few minutes ago, where you don't make shit for money there.
Yeah.
For me, I was in, I guess you could call me an on the job tech. You know, I wasn't registered.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'd worked as a veterinary assistant, but I was performing tech responsibilities. And in my head, the money I would spend to get my tech become a registered tech, it wasn't worth it. Like I'd have to work for another 20 years just to pay off those student loans for the $2 pay raise I would have received, you know, to get my tech degree.
That's bollocks.
It is. So where I was working, starting salary for a tech, or starting hourly wages for a registered technician, was $12 an hour.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little small town clinic in Ohio. I'm sure it's different by now. I know the clinic has grown exponentially in the last 5 years.
Yep.
But it was a small town clinic. Like when I say small town, it was if you grew up there, you can't date anybody there because there's a chance you're probably related.
So like you have to date somebody from the next town over.
Yep.
If you want your children to come out without two heads.
Yeah.
So that's like, so that's one of the things, you know, and I was ready to start a family, and I looked at it. I'm like, for what I'm dealing with, I can't support a family on what I'm making here. My wife was making good money, yeah, but I needed a change, and I was getting burnt out.
Yeah. And that's they're both the major problems in the veterinary industry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And bullying.
Oh my God. Yes.
Holy fuck.
Oh dear Lord.
Yeah.
Dear Lord, I've worked with some royal talent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like catty assholes are just attracted to the veterinary industry. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of problems with people in general. But you know, if you find a good clinic and you find people that work well with you, you're away laughing. If you don't, fuck out of there. It is not worth your time, your energy, and your burnt outness to work with dickheads.
Yeah, and I mean, it definitely hurt when I left.
Yeah.
Like when I left, because there were some coworkers I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
But in the 5 years I worked there, we had a pretty solid turnover where there was only, from when I started there, there were only two of the original employees still working there when I left.
Shit.
Out of the 12 that were there when I started. So, and I mean, and they had both been working there for 10 plus years, so they weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of those things, like I didn't really like most of the people I was working with. We had one tech, best tech I have ever seen. No fucking personal skills.
Oh.
None.
Oh, that's an entire other topic that we could get into, and I could ramble on about that for the next 2 hours. Sweet baby Jesus.
Oh, I hear you.
Fuck. Yeah, that's a real problem because it's all selected on academia. Mm-hmm. So if you're good academically, you get in. Now, of course, the people who are good academically are often the high-functioning autists. And guess what they don't have?
Interpersonal skills.
Exactly. Yep. Actually,
I would 100% agree with you there.
I actually come from a family of genetic high-functioning autists. We can trace it all the way back up my dad's side. My older brother is very much high-functioning autist. I'm female high-functioning autist, which is kind of different from the dudes because we have different social requirements, but still socially awkward as fuck when I don't have my happy legal secretary face on. But my younger brother, bless him, managed to get all of the social skills and all of the good looks, so he's away laughing. But and the most annoying thing is they're both taller than me, so they both use me as a leaning post. The assholes.
You know, I would say that I sympathize with you, but I am the oldest of all of my siblings, and I am the tallest. So,
so you're the bastard who's using everyone as a fucking leaning post, then. Yeah, I tried to compress my little brother's head as he was growing up. It really didn't fucking work.
No.
Very angry about this fact. I got all of the fucking short jeans. Everyone else is over 6 foot. I'm just over 5. How the fuck did that happen? Wankers. I could rant for hours about my genetic fucking family.
Yeah, you got fucked on the genetic lottery there.
That kind of did. I come from a line of high functioning autists, and I myself am a high functioning autist. I just had to learn how to be social because legal secretary, always answering phones, basically the translator between normal human beings and lawyers. So
okay.
You got to get really good at being social. And I learned. It is socialing is a learned behavior. Well, it can be. But a lot of the people who are getting into vet and vet tech are 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that experience. These are high functioning autists who haven't had the time to learn how to social. So they're coming out and they've got the social skills of a gnat, and they have to learn all of this over the next 5 to 10 years. And it's hard.
It is, especially in a field where they're going to be working with the general public. And you know, there's nobody crazier than pet owners.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Listen, let's
get into that another time. But yes. For now, so we're coming up on an hour here.
Yeah.
And I, as much as I'd love to continue this conversation, I do have to be up for work in about 6 hours. So let's call it there.
Yes.
And I definitely, we are 100% going to talk again and get you on another episode here. And I would, if you want, I will talk to you on your podcast. And just since we're at the end of this, I'm going to plug it again. This is Jenny with the We're In It Up to the Shoulder, Darling podcast. she's also a fan of the Veterinary What the Fuck Moments page. So I had a wonderful time talking with you. I absolutely love your accent, by the way.
Thank you. It's the Kiwi Palm accent.
You can ask. What's that?
It's the Kiwi Palm accent, Kiwi English.
Yeah, I love it. The New Zealand Australian accent is it gives me a boner every time I hear it. Just so you know, I've been at full mast this entire conversation. So,
compliment.
Absolutely, it's a compliment. I don't maintain a boner just for anybody. Come on now.
I
am a gentleman.
Then I am very flattered that you've had a raging boner for an hour. That must be painful by now.
Oh, yeah. I have almost no blood in my head right now. Like seconds away from passing out and crashing my head on the table.
I don't think your fans would appreciate that very much, because you still got a page to run.
I do.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I have some very capable admins that I could turn this over to. But no, thank you, Jenny. Thank you so much for talking with me. I truly do appreciate it. I'm so happy I got to have this conversation with you. Got a lot of great information out of you. And a lot of great stuff to share. So again, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for having me on your show. It's you guys are fucking awesome. Thank you for providing seriously fucked up memes, but we're all thinking it anyway.
Yes. Absolutely.
You're just putting the paper.
Dark ones.
They're the ones that give me life. Seriously, these are things that everyone thinks, and if you're not thinking it, you clearly haven't been in the veterinary industry long enough, or you're way too nice. In which case, please get out.
The funny thing is whenever I post a dark meme, I can always tell if it's something that everybody's thinking, because it'll always have a ton of likes and laugh reacts and stuff, but it always have very few shares because they think it, but they're ashamed that they're thinking it. So they share it with their friends.
Oh yeah. Well, you can't, because you have to have that fucked up sense of humor that no one except another medical professional gets.
Absolutely.
And the human medical professionals cannot joke about surprise abortions. So
that was one of my prouder moments, coming up with that one.
That was fucking gold, mate. That was fucking gold. So thank you for the thank you for the dank memes. Thank you for the chat.
Oh, you got it.
And it's been my absolute pleasure, and keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, anyway, that's a conversation. Jenny, you have a wonderful evening.
You too.
I don't know, what time is it where you are right now?
It's 4:30. I've got to go out and feed my horses.
For like a.m.?
P.M.
P.M. Okay.
Yes. civilized time. Anything
civilized? It is. I'm on the Eastern time zone here in the States, and it is 10:30 here.
Nice. Well, that's a good time to get some fucking sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Otherwise, I'm just going to be a complete asshole tomorrow. I don't mind, but the people I work with do. So.
Okay, let's ask Holyo. Adios, mate. Thank you.
Thank you. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
So as you guys just heard, that was my conversation with Jenny from New Zealand. I had a blast talking with her. Coming up, I have two more admin interviews to do. And I have, I think, three more people that have contacted me from the page so far that want to do an interview. So I'm looking forward to doing with those. But again, thank you guys for tuning in. And I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Have a great day.